The Summer Radio Play Festival. The English service presents the Browning version by Terence Rattigan. I can't. Got to do extra work.
On the last day of term, my Taplow, you must be nuts.
I'm not nuts. It's old Crocker Harris and this blessed Agamemnon he's so keen on.
Oh, that. Okay. See you at supper.
Bye. Nobody here. Sir? I say, sir. What a blighter the old crop is. Fancy setting a chap extra work and then not being here. What's this on his desk? Chalks. Oh, jolly decent, this. Wonder if I dare have another. Oh, no, someone coming up the path. It isn't him, though. It's Hunter. I wonder what he wants. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Do I know you?
No, sir.
What's the name?
Taplow.
Taplow? No, good. You're not a scientist, I gather.
No, sir. I'm still in the lower fifth. I can't specialise until next term. That's to say, if I've got my remove all right.
Don't you know yet if you've got your remove?
No, sir. Mr. Crocker Harris doesn't tell us the results like the other masters.
Why not?
Well, you know what he's like, sir.
I believe there is a rule that form results should only be announced by the headmaster on the last day of term.
Yes, but who else pays any attention to it except Mr. Crocker Harris?
I don't, I admit. But that's no criterion. So, you've got to wait until tomorrow to know your fate, have you?
Yes, sir.
Supposing the answer is favourable, what then?
Oh, science, sir, of course.
Yes, we get all the slackers.
I'm extremely interested in science, sir.
Are you? I'm not. Not at least in the science I have to teach.
Well, anyway, sir, it's a good deal more exciting than this muck.
What is this muck?
The Aeschylus, sir. The Agamemnon.
And your considered view is that the Agamemnon of Aeschylus is muck, is it?
No, sir. I don't think the play is muck, exactly. I suppose, in a way, it's rather a good plot, really. Wife murdering her husband and having a lover and all that. I only meant the way it's taught to us. Just a lot of Greek words strung together in 50 lines if you get them wrong.
You sound a little bitter, Taplow.
I am, rather, sir.
Kept in, eh?
No, sir. Extra work.
Extra work? On the last day of school?
Yes, sir. And I might be playing golf. Anyway, you'd think he'd had enough to do himself, considering he's leaving tomorrow for good. But oh, no. I missed a day last week when I had flu, so here I am. And look at the weather, sir.
Bad luck. Still, there's one consolation. You're pretty well bound to get your removal tomorrow for being a good boy and taking extra work.
But I'm not so sure, sir. That would be true of the ordinary masters, all right. They just wouldn't dare not give a chap a remove after he's taking extra work. It'd be such a bad advertisement for them. But those sort of rules don't apply to the croc, Mr. Crocker Harris. I asked him yesterday outright if he'd given me a remove, and do you know what he said, sir?
No, what?
My dear Taplow, I've given you exactly what you deserve. No less, and certainly no more. Do you know, sir, I think he may have marked me down rather than up for taking extra work. I mean, the man's barely human. Have I gone too far?
Yes, much too far. Oh,
sorry, sir. I got sort of carried away.
Evidently. Taplow?
Yes, sir?
What was that Mr. Crocker Harris said to you? Just to repeat it, would you?
My dear Taplow, I have given you exactly what you deserve, no less and certainly no more.
Not in the least like him. Read your nice Aeschylus and be quiet.
Aeschylus?
Look, what time did Mr. Crocker Harris tell you to be here?
7 o'clock, sir.
Well, he's late. Why did you cut? You could still get 9 holes in before lock-up.
Oh, no, I couldn't cut. He'd probably follow me home or something.
I must admit I envy him the effect he seems to have on you boys in his form. You all seem scared to death of him. What does he do, beat you all or something?
Good Lord, no. He's not a sadist like one or two of the others.
I beg your pardon.
A sadist, sir, is someone who gets pleasure out of giving pain.
Indeed. But I think you went on to say that some other masters...
Well, of course they are, sir. I won't mention names, but you know them as well as I do. Of course, I know most masters think we boys don't understand a thing, but dash it, sir, you're different. You're young. Well, comparatively, anyway. And you're science. And you canvassed for Labour in the last election. You must know what sadism is.
What are public schools coming to?
Anyway, the croc isn't a sadist. That's what I'm saying. He wouldn't be so frightening if he were, because at least it would show he had some feelings. But he hasn't. He's all shriveled up inside like a nut. And he seems to hate people to like him. It's funny, that. I don't know any other master who doesn't like being liked.
And I don't know any boy who doesn't trade on that very foible.
Well, it's natural, sir. But not with the croc.
Mr. Crocker Harris.
Mr. Crocker Harris. The funny thing is that in spite of everything, I do rather like him. I can't help it. And sometimes I think he sees it, and that seems to shrivel him up even more.
I'm sure you're exaggerating.
No, sir, I'm not. In form the other day, he made one of his little classical jokes. Of course, nobody laughed because nobody understood it, myself included. Still, I knew he'd meant it as funny, so I laughed. Not out of sucking up, sir, I swear. An ordinary common politeness. I'm feeling a bit sorry for him, having made a dud joke. Now, I can't remember what the joke was, but let's say it was, Benedictus, Benedicator, Benedictine. Now, you laugh, sir. That's it. Well, he peered at me over the top of his spectacles, and then he crooked his finger the way he does, you know, and beckoned me up to his desk. And he said, Taplow, you laughed at my little pun, I noticed. I must confess I am flattered at the evident advance your Latinity has made, that you should so readily have understood what the rest of the board did not. Perhaps now you would be good enough to explain it to them, so that they too can share your pleasure. Come along, Taplow. Do not be so selfish as to keep a good joke to yourself. Tell the others. Oh, Lord, Mrs. Crocker Harris.
Oh, hello.
Hello, Frank. Take some of these parcels, will you?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. Put them anywhere. I must get rid of this wretched hat. It won't be a moment.
Do you think she heard?
No, no.
I think she did. She must have been standing there by the French window quite a time. If she did and she tells him, there goes my remove.
Nonsense.
Waiting for my husband, Tato?
Yes.
He's at the Bursars. Might be there quite a time. If I were you, I'd go.
Well, he said most particularly I was to come.
Well, why don't you run away for a quarter of an hour and come back?
Supposing he gets here before me?
I'll take the blame. I tell you what, you can do a job for him. Take this prescription to the chemist and get it made up.
All right, Mr. Crocker Harris.
And while you're there, you might as well slip into Stewart's and have an ice. Here's a bob. Catch.
Thanks awfully. See if he doesn't tell him.
Okay.
Oh, Taplow.
Yes, Mrs. Crocker Harris?
I had a letter from my father today in which he says he once had the pleasure of meeting your mother.
Oh, really?
Yes. Was at some fete or other in Bradford. My uncle, that's Sir William Bartoff, you know, made a speech, and so did your mother. My father met her afterwards at tea.
Oh, really?
He said he found her quite charming.
Oh, yeah. She's jolly good at those sort of functions. I mean, I'm sure she found him charming, too. Well, I'd better get going. So long.
Thank you for coming round.
That's all right.
You're staying for dinner?
If I may.
If you may. Oh, give me a cigarette.
Here you are.
Thanks. You haven't given that cigarette case away yet, I see.
Did you think I would?
Frankly, yes. Lucky it's a man's case. I don't suppose any of your girlfriends would want it.
Oh, don't be absurd, Millie.
So where have you been all this week?
Correcting exam papers, making reports. You know what end of term is like.
I do know what end of term is like, but even Andrew has managed this last week to take a few hours off to say goodbye to people.
Well, I really have been appallingly busy. Besides, I'm going to stay with you in Bradford.
Not for over a month. Andrew doesn't start his new job until September the 1st, so that's one of the things I have to tell you.
Oh. I meant to be in Devonshire in September.
Who with?
My family.
Surely you can go earlier, can't you? Go in August.
It'll be difficult.
Then you'd better come to me in August.
But Andrew will still be there.
Yes.
I think I can manage September.
That'll be better from every point of view. Except that it means I shan't see you for 6 weeks.
You'll survive that, all right?
Yes, I'll survive it. but not as easily as you will. I have much pride, have I? Oh, Frank, darling, I love you so much. Kiss me. You're very nervous.
I'm afraid of that screen arrangement in front of the door. You can't see people coming in.
Oh, yes, that reminds me. What were you and Taplow up to when I came in just now? Making fun of my husband.
Afraid so, yes.
Sounded rather a good imitation. I must get him to do it for me sometime. It was very naughty of you to encourage him.
I know, it was.
Bad for discipline.
Exactly. Carrying favour with the boys, too. Heavens, how easy it is to be popular. I've only been a master 3 years, but I've already slipped into an act and a vernacular that I just can't get out of. Why can't anyone never be natural with the little blighters?
Well, they probably wouldn't like you if you were.
I suppose the trouble is we're all too scared of them. Either one gets forced into an attitude of false and hearty and jocular bonhomie like myself, or into the sort of petty soulless tyranny which your husband uses to protect himself against the lower fifth.
He'd never be popular, whatever he did.
Possibly not. He ought never to have become a schoolmaster, really. Why did he?
It was his vocation, he said. He was sure he'd make a big success of it, especially when he got his job here first go off. Fine success he's made, hasn't he?
You should have stopped him.
How was I to know? Talked about getting a house, then a headmastership.
A Crocker headmaster? That's a pretty thought.
It's funny to think of now, all right. Still, he wasn't always a crock, you know. He had a bit more gumption once. At least, I thought he had. Oh, don't let's talk any more about him. It's too depressing.
I'm sorry for him.
He's not sorry for himself. So why should you be? It's me you should be sorry for.
I am.
Then show me. Kiss me again, Frank, darling.
No. Let go of me. I tell you, someone might come in. What have you been doing all day?
Calling on the other master's wives, saying fond farewells. I've worked off 12, I've another 7 to do tomorrow.
Oh, you poor thing, I don't envy you.
It's the housemaster's wives that are the worst. They're all so hideously patronizing. You should have heard Betty Carstairs. Oh, my dear, it's such terribly bad luck on you both that your husband should get his heart trouble just when, if only he'd stayed on, he'd have been bound to get a house. I mean, he's considerably senior to my Arthur as it is, and they simply couldn't have gone on passing him over, could they?
There's a word for Betty Carstairs, my dear, that I would hesitate to employ before a lady.
She's got her eye on you, anyway.
Betty Carstairs? Well, that's a rot.
Oh, yes, she has. I saw you at that concert and didn't think I didn't notice.
Really, darling, really. I detest the woman.
Then what were you doing in her box at Lord's?
Carstairs invited me. I went there because it was a good place to see the match from.
Yes, I'm sure it was. Much better than the grandstand, anyway.
Oh, my word.
It's all right, my dear. Don't bother to apologize. We gave the seat away, as it happened.
I'm most terribly sorry.
It's all right. We couldn't afford a box, you see.
It wasn't that. You know it wasn't that. It's just that, well, I clean forgot.
Funny you didn't forget the Carstairs invitation.
Oh, Millie, don't be a fool.
It's you who are the fool. Frank, have you never been in love? I know you're not in love with me, but haven't you ever been in love with anyone? Don't you realize what torture you inflict on someone who loves you when you do a thing like that?
I've told you I'm sorry. I don't know what more I can say.
Why not the truth?
The truth is, I clean forgot.
The truth is you had something better to do, and why not say it?
All right. Believe that if you like. It happens to be a lie, but believe it all the same. Only for heaven's sake, stop this.
Now, for heaven's sake, show me some pity. Do you think it's any pleasanter for me to believe that you cut me because you forgot? You think that doesn't hurt either? Blast. I was so determined to be brave and not mention Lord's. Why did I? Frank, just tell me one thing. Just tell me you're not running away from me. That's all I want to hear.
I'm coming to Bradford.
I think if you don't, I'll kill myself.
I'm coming to Bradford. Oh. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Hunter. Millie, is Taplow not here yet?
I sent him to the chemist to get your prescription made up.
What prescription?
Your heart medicine. Don't you remember? You told me this morning it had run out.
Of course I remember, my dear, but there was no need to send Taplow for it. If you'd telephoned the chemist, he would have sent it round in plenty of time. He knows the prescription. Now Tepler will be late, and I'm so pressed for time I hardly know how to fit him in. Oh, you must forgive me, Hunter. Most kind of you to drop in, but as Millie should have warned you, I'm expecting a pupil for extra work.
He's staying to dinner, Andrew.
Good, then I shall see something of you. However, when Tepler returns, I'm sure you won't mind.
No, of course not. I'll make myself scarce now, if you'd rather. I mean, if you'll please.
Oh, no, there's no need for that. Sit down, do. Will you smoke? I don't, as you know, but Millie does. Millie, give our guest a cigarette.
I haven't any, I'm afraid. I had to catch one from him.
Oh, would you like another? Plenty more.
Thanks.
We expected you at Lord's, Hunter.
What? Oh, yes. I'm most terribly sorry.
He clean forgot, Andrew, imagine.
Forgot?
I really can't apologise enough.
Oh, please don't bother to mention it. On the second day, we managed to sell the seat to a certain Dr. Lambert, who wore, I regret to say, the colours of the opposing faction, but who otherwise seemed a passably agreeable person. You liked him, didn't you, Millie?
Very much indeed. I thought him quite charming.
A charming old gentleman. Well, you had that tea, Hunter?
Yes, thank you.
Is there any other refreshment I can offer you?
No, thank you.
Would it interest you to see the new timetable I've drafted for next term?
Yes, yeah, very much. Hey, what a wonderful piece of work. I never knew you drafted our timetables.
Didn't you? I have done so for the last 15 years. Of course, they are always issued in mimeograph under the headmaster's signature. Now, what form do you take? Upper fifth science. There you are. That's the general picture, but on the back, you'll see each form specified under separate headings. There, that's a new idea of mine. Millie, this might interest you.
You know, it bores me to death.
Millie has no head for this kind of work. There, you see, now here you can follow the upper fifth science throughout every day of the week.
I must say, I think this is really a wonderful job.
Thank you. It has the merit of clarity, I think.
I don't know what they'll do without you.
They'll find somebody else, I expect.
What sort of job is this you're going to?
Hasn't Millie told you?
Well, she said it was a private school.
A crammer's for backward boys. It is run by an old Oxford contemporary of mine who lives in Dorset. The work will not be so arduous as here, and my doctor seems to think I will be able to undertake it without danger.
It's the most rotten bad luck for you. I'm awfully sorry.
My dear Hunter, there's nothing whatever to be sorry for. I'm looking forward to the change. Come in.
I brought your medicine, sir.
Ah, Tepler, good. You have been running, I see.
Yes, sir.
There was a queue at the chemist, I suppose.
Yes, sir.
And doubtless an even longer one at Stewart's.
Yes, sir. I mean, yes, sir.
You were late yourself, Andrew.
Exactly. And for that, I apologize, Tepler.
That's all right, sir.
Luckily, we still have a good hour before lock-up, so nothing has been lost.
I'd better go and see about dinner.
Tableau is desirous of obtaining a remove from my form, Hunter, so that he can spend the rest of his career here playing happily with the crucibles, retorts, and Bunsen burners of your science fifth.
Oh. Has he?
Has he what?
Obtained his remove?
He has obtained exactly what he deserves. No less and certainly no more.
Sorry, sir.
Oh, well, I think I'll cut back to my digs now. May I use the shortcut through the garden?
Oh, do, by all means. We dine at 8. Oh, sit down, Tepler. Open your book at page 41, line 1399. Begin.
Chorus. We are surprised at...
We marvel at...
We marvel at thy tongue, how bold thou art, that you...
Thou...
Can...
Canst...
Canst... Boastfully speak...
Utter such a boastful speech...
Utter such a boastful speech... Over the bloody corpse of the husband you have slain.
Tepler... I presume you are using a different text from mine?
No, sir.
That's strange. For the line as I have it reads, Hatis toion depandri compadzais logon. However diligently I search, I can discover no bloody, no corpse, no you have slain. Simply husband.
Yes, sir, that's right.
Then why do you invent words that simply are not there?
I thought they sounded better, sir. More exciting. After all, she did kill her husband, sir. She's just been revealed with his dead body, and Cassandra's weltering in gore.
I'm delighted at this evidence, Taplow, of your interest in the rather more lurid aspects of dramaturgy, but I feel I must remind you that you are supposed to be construing Greek, not collaborating with Aeschylus.
Yes, but still, sir, translator's license, sir. I didn't get anything wrong. And after all, it is a play, and not just a bit of Greek construe.
I seem to detect a note of end of term in your remarks. I'm not denying that the Agamemnon is a play. It is perhaps the greatest play ever written.
I wonder how many people in the forum think that. Sorry, sir. Shall I go on? Shall I go on, sir?
When I was a very young man, only 2 years older than you are now, Taplow, I wrote, for my own pleasure, a translation of the Agamemnon. A very free translation, I remember, in rhyming couplets.
The whole Agamemnon in verse? That must have been hard work, sir.
It was hard work, but I derived great joy from it. The play had so excited and moved me that I wished to communicate, however imperfectly, some of that emotion to others. When I had finished it, I remember, I thought it very beautiful. Almost more beautiful than the original.
Was it ever published, sir?
No. Yesterday I looked for the manuscript while I was packing my papers. I was unable to find it. I fear it is lost, like so many other things. Lost for good.
Hard luck, sir. Shall I go on, sir?
No. Go back and get that last line right.
That thou canst utter such a boastful speech over thy husband.
Yes, and now, if you would be so kind, you will do the line again, without the facial contortion which you just found necessary to accompany it.
The headmaster's just coming up the drive. Don't tell him I'm in. The fish pie isn't in the oven yet.
I'd better go, hadn't I, sir? I mean, I don't want to be in the way.
We do not yet know that it is I the headmaster wishes to see. Other people live in this building. Come in.
Oh, Crocker Harris.
Headmaster.
What you in? I'm so glad. I hope I'm not disturbing you.
I have been taking a pupil in extra work.
On the penultimate of term? That argues either great conscientiousness on your part, or considerable backwardness on his.
Perhaps a combination of both.
Quite so. But as this is my only chance of speaking to you before tomorrow, I think that perhaps your pupil will be good enough to excuse us.
Oh, yes, sir. Oh, that's really quite all right.
I'm extremely sorry, Taplow. You will please explain to your father exactly what occurred over this lost hour, and tell him I shall be in due course writing to him to return the money involved.
Yes, sir, but please don't bother, sir. I know it's all right, sir. Thank you, sir.
Have the Gilberts called on you yet?
The Gilberts, sir? Who are they?
Gilbert is your successor with the Lower Fifth. He's down here today with his wife, and as they will be taking over this flat, I thought perhaps you wouldn't mind if they came in to look it over.
Of course not.
I've told you about him, I think. He is a very brilliant young man, and won exceptionally high honours at Oxford.
So I understand, sir.
Not, of course, as high as the honours you yourself won there. He didn't, for instance, win the Chancellor's Prize for Latin verse, or the Gainsford.
He won the Hartford Latin, then?
No. Did you win that, too?
I did.
It's sometimes rather hard to remember that you are perhaps the most brilliant classical scholar we have ever had at the school.
You are very kind.
Hard to remember, I mean, because of your other activities. Your brilliant work in the school timetable, for instance. And also for your heroic battle for so long and against such odds as the soul-destroying Lower Fifth.
I have not found that my soul has been destroyed by the Lower Fifth, Headmaster.
I was joking, of course.
Oh, I see.
Is your wife in?
No, not at the moment.
I shall have a chance of saying goodbye to her tomorrow. I am rather glad I have got you to myself. I have a delicate matter. Two rather delicate matters to broach.
Please sit down.
Thank you. Now, you have been with us in all 18 years, haven't you?
Yes.
It is extremely unlucky that you should have had to retire at so comparatively early an age, and so short a time before you would have been eligible for a pension.
Pension? You have decided then not to award me a pension?
Not I, my dear fellow. It has nothing at all to do with me. It's the governors who, I'm afraid, have been forced to turn down your application. I put your case to them as well as I could, but they decided, with great regret, that they couldn't make an exception to the rule.
But I thought, my wife thought, that an exception was made some 5 years ago.
Ah, in the case of Buller, you mean. True. But the circumstances with Buller were quite remarkable. It was, after all, in playing rugger against the school that he received that injury.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And then the governors received a petition from boys, old boys, and parents with over 500 signatures. Your own case, of course, is equally deserving, if not more so, for Buller was a younger man. Unfortunately, rules are rules, and are not made to be broken every few years. At any rate, that is the governor's view.
I quite understand.
I knew you would. Now, might I ask you a rather impertinent question?
Certainly.
You have, I take it, private means?
My wife has some.
Ah, yes. Your wife has often told me of her family connections. I understand her father has a business in Bradford, isn't it?
Yes, he runs a men's clothing shop in the arcade.
Indeed. Your wife's remarks had led me to imagine something a little more extensive.
My father-in-law made a settlement on my wife at the time of our marriage. She has about 300 a year of her own. I have nothing. Is that the answer to your question, Headmaster?
Yes. Thank you for your frankness. Now, this private school you are going
to... My salary at the Crammers is to be 200 a year.
Quite so. With board and lodging, of course.
For 8 months of the year.
Yes, I see. I had hoped that your own means had proved a little more ample. Your wife had certainly led me to some...
I am not denying that a pension would have been very welcome, Headmaster. But I see no reason to quarrel with the governor's decision. What is the other delicate matter you have to discuss?
Well, it concerns the arrangement at prize-giving tomorrow. You are, of course, prepared to say a few words.
I had assumed you would call on me to do so.
Of course, it is always done, and I know the boys appreciate the custom.
I have already made a few notes of what I am going to say. Perhaps you would care...
No, no, that isn't necessary at all. I know I can trust your discretion, not to say your wit. It will be, I know, a very moving moment for you, indeed for us all. But, as I'm sure you'll realize, it is far better to keep these occasions from becoming too heavy and distressing. You know how little the boys appreciate sentiment.
I do.
That is why I planned my own reference to you at the end of my speech to be rather more light and jocular than I would otherwise have made it.
I quite understand. I, too, have prepared a few little jokes and puns for my speech. One, a play of words on Vale, farewell, and Wally, the Christian name of a backward boy in my class, is, I think, rather happy.
Yes. Very neat, yes. That should go down extremely well.
I'm glad you like it.
Well, now, there is a particular favour I have to ask of you in connection with the ceremony, and I know I shall not have to ask in vain. Fletcher, as you know, is leaving too.
Yes, he is going into the city, they tell me.
Yes. Now, he is, of course, considerably junior to you. He's only been here, let me see, 5 years. But, as you know, he has done great things for our cricket. Positive wonders when you remember what doldrums we were in before he came.
Our win at Lord's this year was certainly most inspiring.
Exactly. Now, I'm sure that tomorrow the boys will make the occasion of his farewell speech a tremendous demonstration of gratitude. The applause might go on for minutes. You know what the boys feel about Lord's. And I seriously doubt my ability to cut it short, or even I admit the propriety of trying to do so. Now, you see the quandary in which I am placed.
Perfectly. You wish to refer to me and for me to make my speech before you come to Fletcher.
It's extremely awkward, and I feel wretched about asking it of you. But it's more for your own sake than for mine or Fletcher's that I do. After all, a climax is what one must try to work up to on these occasions.
Naturally, Headmaster, I wouldn't wish to provide an anticlimax.
You really mustn't take it amiss, my dear fellow. The boys, in applauding Fletcher for several minutes, and yourself, say, for, well, not quite so long, won't be making any personal demonstration between you. It will be quite impersonal, I assure you. Quite impersonal.
I understand.
I knew you would. And I can hardly tell you how wisely I think you have chosen. Well, now, as that is all my business, I think perhaps I had better be getting along. This has been a terribly busy day for me. For you, too, I imagine.
Yes.
Ah, headmaster. How good of you to drop in.
Mrs. Crocker Harris, how are you? You're looking extremely well, I must say. Has anyone ever told you, Crocker Harris, that you have a very attractive wife?
For many people, sir, but then I hardly need to be told.
Can I persuade you to stay a few moments and have a drink, Headmaster? It's so rarely we have the pleasure of seeing you.
Unfortunately, dear lady, I was just on the point of leaving. I have two frantic parents waiting for me at home. You are dining with us tomorrow, both of you, aren't you?
Oh, yes, indeed, and so looking forward to it.
I'm so glad. We can say our sad farewells then. Au revoir, Crocker Harris, and thank you very much.
I'll see you out, Headmaster. Don't forget to take your medicine, dear, will you?
No.
Lucky invalid to have such a very charming nurse.
I really don't know what to say to all these compliments, Headmaster. I don't believe in a word of them.
Every word. Until tomorrow, then. Goodbye.
Well, do we get it?
Get what?
The pension, of course. Do we get it?
No. The governors are afraid of establishing a precedent.
Why not?
It's against the rules.
Oh, Buller got it, didn't he? Buller got it. Now, what's the idea of giving it to him and not to us? The mean old brutes. And what did you say? Just sat there and made a joke in Latin, I suppose.
There wasn't very much I could say in Latin or any other language.
Oh, wasn't there? I'd have said it all right. I wouldn't just have sat there twiddling my thumbs and taking it all from that old phony of a headmaster. But then, of course, I'm not a man. What do they expect you to do? Live on my money, I suppose.
There has never been any question of that. I shall be perfectly able to support myself.
For yourself? Well, doesn't the marriage service say something about the husband supporting his wife? You ought to know.
Yes, it does.
And how do you think you're going to do that on 200 a year?
I shall do my utmost to save some of it. You're welcome to it, if I can.
Thank you. For precisely nothing. Well, what else did the old fool have to say?
The headmaster. He wants me to make my speech tomorrow before instead of after Fletcher.
Yes, I knew he was going to ask that.
You knew?
Yes. He asked my advice about it a week ago. I told him to go ahead. I knew you wouldn't mind, and as there isn't a Mrs. Fletcher to make me look a fool, I didn't give two hoots. Come in.
Mr. Crocker Harris.
Yes. Is it Mr. and Mrs. Gilbert?
Yes.
The headmaster told me you might look in.
I do hope we're not disturbing you.
Not at all. This is my wife.
How do you do?
Mr. and Mrs. Gilbert are our successors to this flat, my dear.
Oh, yes. How nice to meet you both.
How do you do? We really won't keep you more than a second. My wife thought as we were here you wouldn't mind us taking a squint at our future home.
This room is charming. Do you think so? I'm afraid it isn't nearly as nice as I'd like to make it, but a schoolmaster's wife has to think of so many other things besides curtains and covers. Boys with dirty boots and a husband with leaky fountain pens, for instance.
Yes, I suppose so. Of course, I haven't been a schoolmaster's wife for very long, you know.
Don't swank, darling. You haven't been a schoolmaster's wife at all yet.
Oh, yes, I have. For 2 months. You were a schoolmaster when I married you.
Prep school doesn't count.
Have you only been married 2 months? 2 months and 16 days.
17.
Andrew, did you hear? They've only been married 2 months.
Indeed, is that all?
Oh, look, darling. They've got a garden. Oh, it is yours, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's only a pocket handkerchief, I'm afraid. Shall I show you the rest of the flat? It's a bit untidy, but you must forgive that.
Of course.
And the kitchen is in a terrible mess. I'm in the middle of cooking dinner.
Do you cook?
Oh, yes, I have to. We haven't had a maid for 5 years.
Oh, I do think that's wonderful of you. I'm scared stiff of having to do it for Peter. I know the first dinner I have to cook for him will wreck our married life.
Highly probable.
Well, these days we've all got to try and do things we weren't really brought up to do. Come along, Mrs. Gilbert, and I'll show you the rest.
Don't you want to see the rest of the flat, Mr. Gilbert?
No, I leave all that sort of thing to my wife. She's the boss. I thought perhaps you could tell me something about the lower fifth.
What would you like to know?
Well, sir, quite frankly, I'm petrified.
I don't think you need to be. May I give you some sherry? Oh,
thank you.
They're mostly boys of about 15 or 16. They're not very difficult to handle. Here you are.
Oh, thanks. The headmaster said you ruled them with a rod of iron. He called you the Himmler of the Lower Fifth.
Did he? The Himmler of the Lower Fifth? I think he exaggerated. I hope he exaggerated. The Himmler of the Lower Fifth.
He only meant that you kept the most wonderful discipline. I must say I do admire you for that. I couldn't even manage that with 11-year-olds, so what I'll be like with 15s and 16s, I shudder to think.
It's not so difficult. They aren't bad boys. Sometimes a little wild and unfeeling, perhaps, but not bad. The Himmler of the Lower Fifth. Dear me.
Perhaps I shouldn't have said that. I've been tactless, I'm afraid.
Oh, no. Please, sit down.
Oh. Thank you.
From the very beginning, I realized that I didn't possess the knack of making myself liked. A knack that you will find you do possess.
Oh, do you think so?
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure of it. It is not a quality of great importance to a schoolmaster, though, for too much of it, as you may also find, is as great a danger as the total lack of it. Oh, forgive me lecturing, won't you?
I want to learn.
I can only teach you from my own experience. For 2 or 3 years, I tried very hard to communicate to the boys some of my own joy in the great literature of the past. Of course, I failed. As you will fail 999 times out of 1,000. But a single success can atone, and more than atone, for all the failures in the world. And sometimes, very rarely it is true, but sometimes I had that success. That was in the early years.
Please, go on, sir.
In the early years, too, I discovered an easy substitute for popularity. I had, of course, acquired, we all do, many little mannerisms and tricks of speech. And I found that the boys were beginning to laugh at me. I was very happy at that and encouraged the boys' laughter by playing up to it. It made our relationship so very much easier. They didn't like me as a man, but they found me funny as a character. And you can teach more things by laughter than by earnestness, for I never did have much sense of humor. So, for a time, you see, I was quite a success as a schoolmaster. I fear this is all very personal and embarrassing to you. Forgive me. You need have no fears about the Lower Fifth.
I'm afraid I said something that hurt you very much. It's myself you must forgive, sir. Believe me, I'm desperately sorry.
There's no need. You were merely telling me what I should have known for myself. Perhaps I did in my heart, and hadn't the courage to acknowledge it. I knew, of course, that I was not only not liked, but now positively disliked. I had realized, too, that the boys, for many long years now, had ceased to laugh at me. I don't know why they no longer found me a joke. Perhaps it was my illness. No, I don't think it was that. Something deeper than that. Not a sickness of the body, but a sickness of the soul. At all events, it didn't take much discernment on my part to realize I had become an utter failure as a schoolmaster. Still, stupidly enough, I hadn't realized that I was also feared. The Himmler of the Lower Fifth. I suppose that will become my epitaph.
Oh, please, sir.
I cannot for the life of me imagine why I should choose to unburden myself on you, a total stranger, when I've been silent to others for so long. Perhaps it is because my very unworthy mantle is about to fall on your shoulders. If that is so, I shall take a prophet's privilege and foretell that you will have a very great success with the Lower Fifth.
Thank you, sir. I shall do my best.
I can't offer you a cigarette. I'm afraid I don't smoke.
Oh, that's all right, sir. Nor do I.
Thank you so much for showing me round. Oh, just imagine, Peter. Mr. and Mrs. Crocker Harris first met each other on a holiday in the Lake District. Isn't that a coincidence?
Yes. Yes, it certainly is. On a walking tour, too.
Andrew was on a walking tour. No walking for me. I can't abide it. I was staying with my uncle. That's Sir William Bartoff, you know. You may have heard of him. Well, he'd taken a house near Windermere. Quite a mansion it was, really. Rather silly for an old gentleman living alone. And Andrew knocked on our front door one day and asked the footman for a glass of water. So my uncle invited him in to tea.
Our meeting wasn't quite as romantic as that.
I knocked her flat on her face.
Not with love at first sight. With the swing door of our hotel bar. So, of course, then he apologised.
Darling, the Crocker Harrises, I'm sure, have far more important things to do than to listen to your detailed but inaccurate account of our very sordid little encounter. Why not just say I married you for your money and leave it at that? Well, come on, we must go.
Isn't he awful to me, Mrs. Crocker House?
Men have no souls, my dear. My husband is just as bad.
Goodbye, Mr. Crocker House.
Goodbye.
I think your idea about the dining room is awfully good, Mrs. Crockerhouse. If only I can get permission from the school.
Good. Bye, sir.
Oh, you will, I know, respect the confidences I've just made to you.
I should hate you to think I wouldn't.
Oh, I'm sorry to have embarrassed you. I don't know what came over me. I've not been very well, you know. Goodbye, my dear fellow, and my best wishes.
Thank you. The very best of good luck to you too, sir, in your future career.
My future career? Oh, yes, thank you.
Well, good. Bye, sir.
Goodbye, and thank you so much. Good-looking couple.
Very.
He looks as if he's got what it takes. I should think he'd be a success, all
That's
right.
That's what I thought.
I don't think it's much of a career, though, a schoolmaster, for a likely young chap like that.
I know you don't.
I bet when he leaves this place, it won't be without attention. It'll be roses, roses all the way, and tears, and goodbye, Mr. Chips.
I expect so.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
You're not going to have another of your attacks, are you? You look dreadful.
Well, I'm perfectly all right.
Well, you know best. Your medicine's on the table anyway. If you want it, I must eat the dinner.
The Himmler of the lower fifth. Come in. Yes, Taplow, what is it?
I just came back to say goodbye, sir.
Oh.
Didn't have a chance with the head here. I rather dashed out, I'm afraid. I thought I'd just come back and wish you luck, sir.
Thank you, Taplow. That's good of you.
I thought this book might interest you, sir.
Oh. What is it?
First translation of the Agamemnon, sir. The Browning version. It's not much good. I've been reading it in the chapel gardens.
Very interesting, Taplow. I know the translation, of course. It has its faults, I agree, but I think you will enjoy it more when you get used to the meter he employs. And thanks for showing it to me.
It's for you, sir.
For me?
Yes, sir. I've written in it. Look, on the flyleaf.
Did you buy this?
Yes, sir. It was only second hand.
You shouldn't have spent your pocket money this way.
That's all right, sir. Wasn't very much. But the price isn't still inside, is it?
No. Just what you've written, nothing else.
That's all right, then. What's the matter, sir? Have I got the accent wrong on?
No. The Paris Promenon is perfectly correct. Taplow, would you be good enough to take that bottle of medicine which you so kindly brought in and pour me out one dose in a glass which you will find in the bathroom through there.
Yes, sir.
The doses are clearly marked on the bottle. I usually put a little water with it.
Yes, sir. Won't be a moment, sir. Here you are, sir.
Thank you. You must forgive this exhibition of weakness, Taplow. The truth is, I have been going through rather a strain lately.
Of course, sir. I quite understand.
Come in.
Oh, sorry. I thought you'd be finished by now.
Come in, Hunter, do. It's perfectly all right. Our lesson was over some time ago, but Taplow most kindly came back to say goodbye.
You sure I'm not intruding?
Oh, no. I want you to see this book that Taplow has given me, Hunter. Look,
A translation of the Agamemnon by Robert Browning. Do you see the inscription he has put into it?
Yes, but it's no use to me, I'm afraid. I never learnt Greek.
Then we'll have to translate it for him, won't we, Tepler?
Yes, sir.
Ton kratunta maltekos theos prosoten eumenos prosterketai. That means, in a rough translation, God, from afar, looks graciously upon a gentle master. It comes from a speech of Agamemnon's to Clytemnestra.
I see. Very pleasant. And very apt.
Very pleasant. But not, perhaps, after all, so very apt.
Cut along, Tapper.
Very well, sir. Goodbye, sir. The best of luck.
Goodbye, Taplow. And thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Dear me. What a fool I made of myself in front of that boy. And in front of you, Hunter. I can't imagine what you must think of me.
Oh, nonsense.
I'm not a very emotional person, as you know, but there was something so very touching and kindly about his action. And coming as it did just after. This is a very delightful gift, don't you think?
Delightful.
The quotation, of course, he didn't find entirely by himself. I happened to make some little joke about the line in form the other day. But he must have remembered it all the same to have found it so readily. And perhaps he means it.
I'm sure he does. Or he wouldn't have written it.
Hello, Frank. I'm glad you're in time. Your cigarette, I've been gasping for one for an hour.
Oh, certainly. Your husband has just had a very nice present.
Who? Who from?
Taplow.
Oh, Taplow. Let's see.
Is this a book? The Browning translation of the Agamemnon. He bought it with his own pocket money, Millie, and wrote a very charming inscription inside. Look.
God looks kindly upon a gracious master.
No, not gracious. Gentle, I think. Prosoten numenos. Yes, I think gentle is the better translation. I would rather have had this present than almost anything I can think of.
The artful little beast.
Millie.
Artful? Why artful?
Millie, please.
Why artful, Millie?
Oh, my dear. Because I came into this room this afternoon to find him giving an imitation of you to Frank here. Obviously, we're scared stiff. I was going to tell you, and you ditch his remove or something. Oh, I don't blame him for trying a few bobs worth of appeasement.
I see.
Well, take your book.
Put it on the table, will you?
Where are you going, dear? Dinner's nearly ready.
Only to my room for a moment. I won't be long.
You've just had your medicine, dear. I shouldn't take another dose if I were you.
I am allowed two at a time.
Well, see, it is two and no more, won't you?
I will.
Millie, how could you?
Oh, why not? Why should he be allowed his comforting little illusions? I'm not.
Listen, you're to go to his room now and tell him that was a lie.
Certainly not. It wasn't a lie.
If you don't, I will.
I shouldn't if I were you. It'll only make things worse. He won't believe you.
We'll see about that.
Oh, go ahead. See what happens. He knows I don't lie to him. He knows what I told him was the truth, and he won't like your sympathy. He'll think you're making fun of him, like Taplow.
You may be right. Well, that's that. We're finished, Millie, you and I.
Frank, really? Oh, don't be hysterical.
I'm not. I mean it.
Oh, yes, you mean it. Of course you mean it. Now, just sit down, dear, and relax and forget all about artful little boys and their five bob presents. And talk to me.
Forget? If I live to be 100, I shall never forget that little glimpse you've just given me of yourself.
Frank, you're making a frightening mountain out of an absurd little molehill.
All right. But the mountain I'm making in my imagination is so frightening that I'd rather try to forget both it and the repulsive little molehill that gave it birth. But as I know I never can, I tell you, Millie, from this moment, you and I are finished.
You can't scare me, Frank. I know that's what you're trying to do, but you can't do it.
I'm not trying to scare you, Millie. I'm telling you the simple truth. I'm not coming to Bradford.
All right, my dear. If that's the way you feel about it, don't come to Bradford.
Right. Now, I think you ought to go to your room and look after Andrew.
I'm leaving.
Oh, no. No, stop a minute, Frank. I don't understand. Really, I don't. What have I done?
I think you know what you've done, Billy. Go and look after Andrew.
Andrew? Well, why the sudden concern for Andrew?
Because I think he's just been about as badly hurt as a human being can be. And as he's a sick man and in a rather hysterical state, might be a good plan to go and see how he is.
Hurt? Andrew? Hurt? Oh, you can't hurt Andrew. He's dead.
Why do you hate him so much, Millie?
Because he keeps me from you.
That isn't true.
Because he's not a man at all.
He's a human being.
You've got a fine right to be so noble about him after deceiving him for 6 months.
Twice in 6 months. At your urgent invitation. Thank you for that. I deserved it. I deserve a lot worse than that, too.
Oh, Frank, forgive me. I didn't mean it.
You better have the truth, Millie. It had to come sometime. I've never loved you. I've never told you I loved you.
I know, Frank. I know. I've always accepted that.
You asked me just now if I was running away from you. Well, I was.
I knew that, too.
But I was coming to Bradford. It was going to be the very last time I was ever going to see you. And at Bradford, I would have told you that.
You wouldn't. You wouldn't. You've tried to tell me that so often before, and I've always stopped you somehow. Somehow. I would have stopped you again.
I don't think so, Millie. Not this time.
Frank, I don't care what humiliations you heap on me. I know you don't give two hoots for me as a person. I've always known that. I've never minded so long as you cared for me as a woman. And you do, Frank, you do. You do, don't you? It'll be all right at Bradford. You'll see. It'll be all right there.
I'm not coming to Bradford, Millie.
Perhaps you'd be so kind as to put this medicine bottle away, Millie.
How much have you taken?
You should know me well enough by now, my dear, to realize how unlikely it is that I should ever take an overdose.
I must put the final touches to dinner.
I'm not staying to dinner, I'm afraid.
Indeed, I'm sorry to hear that. You'll have a glass of sherry?
No, thank you.
You'll forgive me if I do.
Oh, of course. Well, perhaps I'll change my mind. About Taplow.
Yes?
It is perfectly true that he was imitating you. I, of course, was mostly to blame in that. And I'm very sorry.
That is perfectly all right. Was it a good imitation?
No.
I expect it was. Boys are often very clever mimics.
We talked about you, of course, before that. He said... You probably won't believe this, but I think I ought to tell you. He said he liked you very much.
Indeed.
I can remember very clearly his exact words. He said, he doesn't seem to like people to like him, but in spite of that, I do. Very much. So, you see, it looks, after all, as if the book might not have been a mere question of appeasement.
The book? Dear me, what a lot of fuss about a little book. And not a very good little book at that.
I would like you to believe me.
Possibly you would, my dear Hunter, but I can assure you I'm not particularly concerned about Taplow's views of my character. Or about yours either, if it comes to that.
I think you should keep that book all the same. You may find it'll mean something to you after all.
Exactly. It will mean a perpetual reminder to myself of a story with which Taplow is at this very moment regaling his friends in the house. I gave the croc a book to buy him off, and he blubbed. The croc blubbed! I tell you, I was there, I saw it, the croc blubbed. My mimicry is not as good as his, I fear. Forgive me. And now let us leave this idiotic subject and talk of more pleasant things. Do you like this sherry? I got it on my last visit to London.
If Taplow ever breathes a word of that story to anyone at all, I'll murder him. But he won't. And if you think I will, you greatly underestimate my character as well as his. Goodbye.
Are you leaving so soon? Goodbye, my dear fellow.
As this is the last time I shall probably ever see you, I'm going to offer you a word of advice.
I shall be glad to listen to it.
Leave your wife.
So that you may the more easily carry on your intrigue with her?
How long have you known that?
Since it first began.
How did you find out?
By information.
By whose information?
By someone whose word I could hardly discredit.
No. That's too horrible to think of.
Nothing is ever too horrible to think of, Hunter. It is simply a question of facing facts.
She might have told you a lie. Have you faced that fact?
She never tells me a lie. In 20 years, she has never told me a lie. Only the truth.
This was a lie?
No, my dear Hunter. Do you wish me to quote you dates?
And she told you 6 months ago?
Isn't it 7?
Then why have you allowed me inside your home? Why haven't you done something? Reported me to the governors, anything, made a scene, knocked me down.
Knocked you down?
You didn't have to invite me to dinner.
My dear Hunter, if over the last 20 years I had allowed such petty considerations to influence my choice of dinner guests, I would have found it increasingly hard to remember which master to invite and which to refuse. You see, Hunter, you mustn't flatter yourself you're the first. My information is a good deal better than yours, you understand. It's authentic.
She's evil.
That's hardly a kindly epithet to apply to a lady whom I gather you have asked to marry.
Did she tell you that?
She's a dutiful wife. She tells me everything.
That at least was a lie.
She never lied.
That was a lie. Do you want the truth? Can you bear the truth?
I can bear anything.
What I did cold-bloodedly. Out of weakness and ignorance and crass stupidity. I'm bitterly, bitterly ashamed of myself. But in a sense, I'm glad you know. Though I'd rather 1,000 times that you'd heard it from me than from your wife. I won't ask you to forgive me. I can only tell you, with complete truth, that the only emotion she has ever succeeded in arousing in me, she aroused in me for the first time 10 minutes ago. An intense and passionate disgust.
What a delightfully chivalrous statement.
Oh, forget chivalry, Croft, for heaven's sake. Forget all your fine mosaic scruples. You must leave her. It's your only chance.
She's my wife, Hunter. You seem to forget that. As long as she wishes to remain my wife, she may.
She's out to kill you.
Oh, my dear Hunter, if that was indeed her purpose, you should know by now that she fulfilled it long ago.
Why won't you leave her?
Because I wouldn't wish to add another grave wrong to one I have already done her.
What wrong have you done her?
To marry her. You see, my dear Hunter, she is really quite as much to be pitied as I. We are both of us interesting subjects for your microscope. Both of us needing from the other something that would make life supportable for us. And neither of us able to give it. Two kinds of love, hers and mine. Worlds apart, as I know now, though. When I married her, I didn't think they were incompatible. In those days, I hadn't thought that her kind of love, the love she requires, and which I was unable to give her, was so important that its absence would drive out the other kind of love, the kind of love that I require, and which I thought in my folly was by far the greater part of love. I may have been, you see, Hunter, a brilliant classical scholar, but I was woefully ignorant of the facts of life. I know better now, of course. I know that in both of us, the love that we should have borne each other has turned to bitter hatred. That's all the problem is. Not a very unusual one, I venture to think. Nor nearly as tragic as you seem to imagine. Merely the problem of an unsatisfied wife and a henpecked husband. You'll find it all over the world. It is usually, I believe, a subject for farce. And now, if you have to leave us, my dear fellow, please don't let me detain you any longer.
Don't go to Bradford. Stay here until you take up your new job.
I think I've already told you I'm not interested in your advice.
Leave her. It's the only way.
Will you please go?
All right. I'd just like you to say goodbye to me properly, though. Will you? I shan't see you again. I know you don't want my pity, but I would like to be of some help.
If you think by this expression of kindness, Hunter, that you can get me to repeat the shameful exhibition of emotion I made to Taplow a moment ago, I must tell you that you have no chance. My hysteria over that book just now was no more than the reflex action of the spirit, the muscular twitchings of a corpse.
It can never happen again. A corpse can be revived. I don't believe in miracles, don't you? Funnily enough, as a scientist, I do. Your faith would be touching if I were capable of being touched by it. You are, I think. I've had to come and visit you at this, Kramer.
That is an absurd suggestion.
No, I suppose it is, rather, but all the same, I'd like to do it. May I?
Of course not.
Your term begins on the 1st of September, doesn't it?
I tell you, the idea is quite childish.
I could come about the second week.
You would be bored to death, and so probably would I.
Where's my diary? Let's say Monday the 12th, then.
Say anything you like. Only please go. Please go, Hunter.
At 6, then. Monday, September the 12th. Will you remember that?
I suppose I'm at least as likely to remember it as you are.
That's fixed, then. Goodbye. Until then.
Goodbye.
May I go out through your garden?
Of course.
I'm off to have a quick word with Taplow. Oh, by the way, may I take him a message from you?
What message?
Has he or has he not got his remove?
He has.
May I tell him?
It is highly irregular.
Yes, you may. Go ahead. Oh, by the way, I'd better have the address of that Crammers.
Dinner's ready. You're staying, Frank, aren't you?
No, I'm afraid not. What's that address?
The old deanery.
The old deanery?
Malcolm.
Malcolm. Dorset. Dorset. I'll write to you and you can let me know about trains. Bye.
Oh, that's a laugh, I must say.
What's a laugh, my dear?
You inviting him to stay with you.
I didn't. He suggested it.
He's coming to Bradford.
Yes, I remember your telling me so.
He's coming to Bradford. He's not going to you.
The likeliest contingency is that he's not going to either of us. Shall we have dinner?
He's coming to Bradford.
I expect so. Oh, by the way, I'm not. I shall be staying here until I go to Dorset.
Suit yourself. What makes you think I'll join you there?
I don't.
You didn't expect me.
I don't think either of us has the right to expect anything further from the other. I don't... Excuse me. Yes, Headmaster. With the timetable. It's perfectly simple. The middle 4th B division will take a 10-minute break on Tuesdays and a 15-minute break on alternate Wednesdays, while exactly the reverse procedure will apply to the lower shell C division. I thought I had sufficiently explained that on my chart. Oh, I see. Well, thank you. That is very good of you. Yes. I think you'll find it will work out quite satisfactorily. Oh, by the way, Headmaster, I have changed my mind about the prize-giving ceremony. I intend to speak after instead of before, Fletcher, as is my privilege. Yes, I quite understand, but I am now seeing the matter in a different light. I know, but I am of the opinion that occasionally an anti-climax can be surprisingly effective. Goodbye. Come along, my dear. We mustn't let our dinner get cold.
You have been listening to the Browning version by Terence Rattigan in our special Summer Radio Play Festival.